I'm John Krall. About 48 hours ago, the contentious debate between advocates for equal rights for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender citizens and social conservatives arguing they should be allowed to refuse service to LGBT Hoosiers on the basis of faith came to an anticlimactic end when Senate Bill 344 died. That, however, did not end the discussion. We'll talk today on No Limits about where the debate goes from here. My guests are the author of Senate Bill 344, Senator Travis Holtman, Megan Robertson of Frontrunner Strategies, Peter Hanscom of Indiana Competes, and Chris Paulson of Freedom Indiana. Please call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter to join the conversation. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are going to be talking about the ongoing discussion about balancing the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender citizens of the state of Indiana and the principles of faith. The tripwire for this conversation was the demise of Senate Bill 344, which attempted to deal with some of those issues. It died about 48 hours ago. And if you would like to join the conversation, we invite you to do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are joining us by phone, Senator Travis Holtman. He's a Republican from Markle and was the author of Senate Bill 344. Chris Paulson with Freedom Indiana. Peter Hanscom, who is with Indiana Competes, and Megan Robertson of Frontrunner Strategies. I'd like to welcome all of you to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. And I also should say, given that we did this on the fly, we cast the nets pretty wide. If there are other people who would like to join the conversation, we want to force exactly this kind of conversation. And we would invite you to call in at 866-476-3881. Senator Holtman, I know your time is limited, so I'm going to start with you. I'd like for you first to talk a little bit about what you were trying to do with Senate Bill 344, and then we're going to talk about what happened, why it didn't come forward.
Okay. Well, there have been several of us talking at the State House during the whole RFRA debate and sort of the ugly consequences of that from just a reputation standpoint for the state of Indiana. And in an effort to attempt to get in front of the game on that issue, I had talked with Senator Long and others about trying to take more of a proactive stance to see if there wasn't something that we could do to extend rights for a protected class status for the LGBT community, but at the same time strengthen religious liberties that we felt were very important. And I honestly think, and have thought, and I don't want to speak for Senator Long, but I'm fairly certain he's in the same camp, that there was some room for compromise between the two sides, that we extend protected class status to the LGBT community, but at the same time we build in some religious freedom exemptions that everyone could be happy with. And we didn't really look at what Utah did other than to say that there is the possibility of a compromise and for folks to come together to get this worked out, but tried to take it a step further with what we did more than what Utah did to include public accommodation for the LGBT community, including T's. And we just were not able to get there. There was just so much pushback from folks that in the political world we decided we need to pull back a bit, and that's where 344 came into play then.
And where you say there was so much pushback, where did the pushback come from, and what was the nature of it?
We got a lot of pushback from folks in the LGBT community because they did not like the exemptions. One of those lessened or one of those to go away altogether. And we had people in the far right religious community that didn't want the extension of protected class status to the LGBT community at all, and felt that we were putting Christian businesses at risk because we were only providing exemptions for small business four or fewer, and then in 344 it was less than six, which complied with our current civil rights law in the state of Indiana.
Well, I'm going to throw the conversation open here because obviously we've got three people who are lobbying on this measure and we're concerned about it. Where were the concerns as far as you were concerned with Senate Bill 344? I'm going to start with Chris, but I want to hear everybody's thoughts.
I think we had quite a few concerns with 344, but we're willing to compromise to bring LGBT protections to the whole state. Some of the concerns Senator Holdman hit on were the broad religious exemptions. There are already a number of religious protections in both the federal and the state constitution, and we felt like those did not need to be broadened more than that.
Megan.
Yeah, I think there was concern with some of the broadness of the religious exemptions that were added in. Certainly, there should have been some protections for religious folks. I think that's appropriate, but I think that those were overly broad. But I think the real sticking point, I think all of us on this show were involved in the conversations with our various groups, and certainly the senator. Just want to thank you for engaging in the conversation first off. But I think the biggest sticking point for a lot of the folks on our side of the issue was leaving out the trans community entirely. If they had been included in some sort in the bill, I think the majority of us were willing to see it as a step in the process. In the final bill, it would not have been acceptable to exempt the T community from, the general protections, but at least getting gender identity into the bill was kind of the biggest thing for us, while the other side didn't even want to see protections for anybody in the LGBT community.
Peter, I'm going to give you.
Yeah, certainly. I think it'd be remiss as Megan didn't start off by thanking Senator Holdman for, following through on his word and having this conversation, in which I can certainly, from all that I've heard, was not an easy lift with his caucus. But in doing so, going back and looking from the business community, some of the concerns, obviously the fallout of RFRA, we wanted to make a definitive, explicit statement: the discrimination of no kind is tolerated here in Indiana against the LGBT community. And when we started looking at the bill, certainly I think points that both Chris and Megan have pointed out are very valid and agree 100%. But we also were very concerned at looking where we see language within the bill that says if, these protected classes here have these kinds of rights, but if you're a part of this protected class, which we're going to include here, you can be discriminated against, but you just have to follow these steps in order to be able to have that discrimination. And what we wanted, we were hoping that we could, work together with both sides to explicitly say discrimination of no kind is tolerated here, whereas I think we were getting a little bit into a tricky territory where it looked as, here's a more blanket statement of, we don't tolerate discrimination. But if you actually, the further down you read into it, there were folks who could say, I can. I just have to do exactly these things and follow this roadmap in order to be able to do so.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the demise of Senate Bill 344, which attempted to deal with the question of civil rights protection for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender citizens here in Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Senator Holdman, the transgender piece of this did seem to become kind of a fundamental sticking point. Why was that such a difficult part of this process?
Well, when we started out, I didn't think it was going to be, but there were one particular group on the far right that put out a video telling folks that there were going to be situations where your daughter, your wife, your granddaughter was going to be assaulted in the women's restroom because there was going to be dirty old men dressed up like women go in there and assault your loved ones. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous assertions that were being made. And then it just seemed to raise that question, well, which restroom do transgenders use? And my response was, well, they use the restroom they've been using all this time, and you never knew the difference. So it really, I thought, was a moot argument, although folks used that to incite fear and opposition to the language. But then also, I think they did that to raise money for their organization, to be quite honest with you. And I'm not sure they were genuine in their efforts, and in fact were rather disingenuous in what they were doing, because I've been accused by other members of my caucus, my friends, saying you're the best fundraiser for some of these guys out here because of issues that you raise and want to bring for public discussion. And it's just unfortunate that we couldn't have an adult conversation about this, to be honest with you.
Well, is the conversation over? I know that you and Senator Long basically both said this is going to come back next year. And I guess I should ask a simple question here. If it does come back next year, will you attempt to carry it again?
Well, I need a few more nights rest.
fair answer.
Yeah, fair answer.
And to be honest with you, my wife told me this morning when I was getting ready to leave, she said, "You aren't going to do this again, are you?" And I said, "Well, we'll talk about it." So I don't know.
Most spouses know what that means.
Yes.
And they know the code.
But, I'm already being threatened that I'm going to be primaried in 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I want folks to understand I don't get elected to get reelected. And I get elected because I think I can add to trying to resolve some public policy debates and issues in our state. And if the voters in my district decide that this is not the place for me, then that's I can live with that. It's just whether or not I'm willing to take the abuse, and my wife suffers along with me on what folks say about me on Facebook. And I've always identified with the conservative evangelical Christian because I think I am one. Mm-hmm. And that's how I identify myself. But to see some of the things that were said about me by folks in that community, and it was just very painful, and emotionally it's been very painful, and I think I can handle the political consequences much better than I can handle the emotional and personal consequence that comes with some of the things that are said and the way I'm treated. But you know, I'm a big boy. I can take it, but it's just it is hurtful from folks that you thought you identified with, and that's very unfortunate. Because I thought we were building in religious liberty protections, but and it's interesting. And I just came to realize this, and I'm sorry, I'm occupying.
That's
all the
okay. No. And we want to make, while you have got the time here, we do want to hear from you. We are coming up on a break, though, so I wanted to ask a question that's more procedural. I mean,
go ahead.
The House Minority Leader said this morning that it's not over for this session, that these issues. Is there a way that some form of 344, at least the ideas that were in it, could come back?
Well, it hasn't been defeated. So we have more strict rules in the Senate than what the House does with regard to germaneness. But if any issue has been, and the term that's used is decisively defeated, then you cannot raise that issue again in other legislation. And because the bill was pulled or I passed on second reading, there's actually been no decision. As a matter of fact, the only decision we had was a positive one when it came out of committee last week.
So it could be alive. I've got to take us to a break right now.
Sure.
We are talking about civil rights for the LGBT community here on No Limits. I am John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about civil rights legislation for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender citizens of this state. The hook for the show is the apparent demise. We learned only apparent demise of Senate Bill 344. Which occurred on Tuesday, just before we went to the break. My guests are Senator Travis Holdman, who's a Republican from Markle, who is the author of the bill, Chris Paulson from Freedom Indiana, Peter Hanscom, who is with Indiana Competes, and Megan Robertson of Frontrunner Strategies. Just before we went to the break, Senator Holdman said that because 344 hadn't been defeated, it could conceivably be resurrected. Given some other procedural things, and I guess I would be remiss in asking Senator Holdman if that wasn't part of the calculation in pulling the bill back, is that you keep it alive to fight another day.
Yeah, John, not really. We were just coming down to the wire on second reading, and I just did not have the support that I needed, didn't have the votes to get it out. Now, a lot can happen in the next few weeks. We go till March the 14th. We have to be finished. So a lot can happen. But it just did not appear, well, I didn't have the votes, and it does not appear that there is the desire to bring it back this session. But like I said, you don't know what happens out there on the landscape between now and the middle of March either.
How many votes were you shy?
I don't really know, to be quite honest with you. I had done my own head count, and I had people in the hallway that were telling me, this is what we think your head count is. But we polled the caucus, and Jim Merritt is our caucus chairman, and he just came back to me and said, you don't have the votes to get it out of here. So I needed 26 votes to get it out of the Senate.
How many Democratic votes would you
have? I'm sorry?
How many Democratic votes do you think
that
you
that got? I don't know either. It really, to be honest with you, the issue came down in great part to the T issue of whether or not T's were in or T's were out. And, I mean, I tried, I gave it the college try. I tried about every variation to get some compromise going, but every time I would make a move to include T's in housing and employment but not public accommodation, I'd have some folks say, I can support that, but if you do that, then I would have folks who say, well, if you do that, I can't support it. And so I was... And with every variation that I had, I would pick up some votes, but then I would lose votes on the other side. And so I was just, as I said, and used the metaphor of standing in the narrows at Zion National Park, I could touch both solid walls of the canyon with both hands, but I just could not get those walls to move on either side.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the civil rights legislation that was before the Indiana General Assembly in regard to the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender citizens. If you would like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Ian has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ian, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Big fan of the show. My question is in regards to self-identifying Christian Hoosier business owners who would refuse service to any member of the LGBT community on religious grounds. Why doesn't that seem like the opposite of the Christian thing to do? Where is love thy neighbor in all of this talk? And why aren't people crying hypocrisy more? It seems like a paranoid delusion to think that perhaps somehow Christianity in Indiana is somehow under assault. You know, this is not Syria after all.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I think I will let Chris take that one.
I think the narrative kind of played out that faith was on the other side, but that was not totally the case. The faith community that stood up for full LGBT rights was huge. We had over 250 faith leaders sign on saying that it was important that full LGBT rights came to Indiana this year. So the other side tried to own the faith argument, but I definitely think that faith says that you should love thy neighbor.
Senator Holdman, I mean, obviously this sounds like it's been a somewhat searing experience for you personally, and it strikes me, you've been on the show before and I've talked with you a couple of times, that you do take these issues seriously. Were you troubled a bit by kind of the broad assertion of really government endorsement of religious expression that at least one side of the debate was trying to make?
Well, I was. And to follow up with something that Chris said, you know, there were people who told me they were praying for me and supporting me. And then I would hear there were people praying that the bill would die and would be killed. And people urging others, good Christian people, as it was said, good Christian people need to rise up and fight this and kill it, you know, and pray for God to move to kill it. At the same time, I had people on the other side saying, we're praying for God to move this. So, you know, Chris is right. There were people on both sides of the extreme on this issue that consider themselves to be Christian people, and the caller is right to a large degree, you know. And that was sort of my take. How do we extend Christian hospitality and Christian love to these folks that don't live or believe the way we do? Ridiculing them and being unfriendly to them. I just, that was a difficult piece for me to get through.
Let me ask, I want to pull Megan and Peter in here. I mean, we keep coming back to this notion that the arguments were unmoving. Is there room to compromise here? And where would it be? I'll start with Megan first.
I mean, I think there could be room to compromise, but I think it's also important to remember the religious protections that already exist in the law. You know, if you look at even our civil rights code, there's a tremendous number of carve outs for, you know, religious organizations, groups affiliated with religious organizations, businesses under the size of six people. So there are a lot of carve outs already. But I think from my perspective, and by the way, my dad is an ordained Southern Baptist minister. I grew up, I went to 7th through 12th grade to a Christian school, Portage Christian School, and then went to Anderson University. So I think there's room for everybody to coexist, but I don't think that some of the folks on the other side feel that way. They truly, whether it's a disliking or just not wanting any protections, they don't want any protections for the LGBT community at all. And if that is their only, if that's their position, then I don't feel like there's a lot of room for compromise, because they're unwilling to budge on anything. So I just look at the protections that are already there and see that there's a lot that I feel like are kind of sufficient right now. So why wouldn't they be sufficient if we added LGBT into the civil rights code?
Public accommodation seems to be the sticky point here for both sides, to be honest with you, John.
Okay. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Corvin. And if you'd like to join the conversation by email, you can send it to us at nolimits@wfyi.org. This one says, Senator Holdman, you stated in the post 344 reactions that you were in between both sides on the issue and neither side wanted to move. Do you think that LGBT advocates should compromise, and if so, on what?
Well, I'm not sure where the compromise exists. We just needed to get something done to move the bill forward. My goal, and I'm not naive enough to think that the bill at any place that it came out of the Senate was going to be the final law in the state of Indiana if we were successful in getting something done. My goal was just to get the bill out of the Senate, push it to the House so we could keep the discussion going. But I couldn't even get to that point. And I wish we had it only been momentarily that folks on one side or the others to say we'll agree to this, but we reserve the right to vote against it or to oppose it in its final form if we don't get this included or we don't get that included. But I couldn't get there. You know, there's been many times that there'll be a bill in committee that I don't like the bill, but I want to talk about it because overall I think there's some great points to a piece of legislation, but I want it massaged and amended further, and I'll not like it, and I'll reserve a right to vote against it on the floor, but I'll vote for it in committee just to keep the ball moving with hopes that we can get where we want to get. But I couldn't even get to that point, John. I couldn't get the bill out of the Senate to keep the discussion going because it had a long journey to go once it gets out of the Senate to get through the House and get to the governor.
Peter, I'm going to ask a question because I had a conversation at the State House because it was an off-the-record conversation. I'm not going to mention the name of the lobbyist for a major employer here in the state who was saying about 344 that, and, you know, he supported trying to figure out a way to include, to create civil rights protections for LGBT citizens, as did his company. And he said he had been trying to tell everyone, you need to get behind this. You're going to hate it. You're going to hate it. But, you know, we have to keep it moving forward just so we can keep the conversation going. Was there that level of realism on the side of those pushing for this protection?
100%. I mean, I think the way that Senator Holdman just put it is exactly where we were, right? We knew that the legislative process is very long and is very drawn out. There are many hurdles that you have to cross. And it was ultimately our hope that we would be able to reach some sort of compromise, some sort of agreement to keep the bill moving through that process, knowing, right, that it's not perfect as final passage. And as Senator Holdman just said, that both sides would be able to reserve the right to come at the very end of the day, right, and say, this isn't, you know, acceptable for us. We don't mm-hmm. think this is right, or it gives too much, or it's not enough. But the idea that, at least for the time being, that conversation has sort of been halted in the beginning of February, when those are the kinds of conversations we would ultimately have hoped we were going to be having in March. And to the point you made earlier, asking to
you
Megan.
Should say Megan.
Yes, yeah. to the point
it's,
that
it's
Megan
not
made,
a visual medium.
that Megan made earlier okay. about understanding the current realities of the bill yeah. and of the Indiana civil rights law. Indiana Competes commissioned a poll, and we found that 73% of Hoosiers already thought it was illegal yeah. to discriminate against an LGBT Hoosier in employment, housing, or public accommodation. From our vantage point, from the business side, right, that's alarming in that folks already assumed that this was the law because Hoosiers are overwhelmingly kind people, we believe, and you know the majority of folks would do the right thing. But unfortunately, that we don't make laws for the people who are traditionally already following the rules.
We are talking about civil rights legislation, or the lack thereof, for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Hoosiers. Austin, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. What's on your mind? Sounds like maybe Austin's cell dropped the call. Well, instead, I will take an email question from a listener named Michael, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Says, as usual, a great calm discussion. I know lots of very religious people of several faiths and all have a high standard on following their faith traditions. For example, many do no work on Saturday or Sunday, depending on their faith. Does that mean that someone refusing to serve an LGBT person could also meet a higher standard? Can a person claim a religious exemption to not serve the LGBT community, but then select which other religious rules they need to follow? Can they steal, lie, work on Sunday, or commit adultery, but then claim a religious exemption to serve an LGBT wedding? Senator Holdman, I'm assuming that kind of question would make you really, really nervous, because that gets into that whole question of how much state policing of religious faith can happen.
Well, first of all, it's not a criminal act to refuse to serve someone. If the law would have passed, it would have just been a civil matter that somebody could bring a complaint before the Civil Rights Commission. If the business was of size to basically merit that, and I see the caller's point of what they're making. I'm old enough to remember blue laws. Maybe some of you remember those, and some of you don't. But blue laws. Basically was what shuttered businesses on Sundays. And it took a while for that to work away, and finally commerce resolved the issue itself. But there was a day when you couldn't have a business open on a Sunday for religious reasons. But as our culture and our legal system has become more secularized, I think we leave that up to individuals to make that decision for themselves. And I think it's just a tough question. As I said earlier to Megan's point, it really comes down to the whole of public accommodation issue. Do you say to someone that wants a wedding cake baked for a same-sex couple, I don't do that because I'm a Christian and that's abhorrent to my faith? Or do you just say, I'm sorry, I'm booked up that day, or I'm sorry, I can't do that, and they don't have to give a reason. I think folks are left to their own devices currently, and, Peter may be alarmed that 70-some percent think that the LGBTs are protected now, but I think that's a good thing, because I think it does point to the fact that we are a hospitable people. Welcoming people in Indiana.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the demise of civil rights legislation, the apparent demise in the Indiana General Assembly. My guests are Senator Travis Holdman, who is a Republican from Markle, who is the author of the legislation, Chris Paulson from Freedom Indiana, Peter Hanscom, who is with Indiana Competes, and Megan Robertson of Front Runner Strategies. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881 or send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the demise of Senate Bill 344, which attempted to carve out some civil rights protections in Indiana law for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender citizens. It apparently died on Tuesday, although there is some possibility, we've learned in the conversation so far, that that some of the concepts might be resurrected. My guests are Senator Travis Holdman, who is Republican from Markle and authored the bill, Chris Paulson from Freedom Indiana, Peter Hanscom of Indiana Competes, and Megan Robertson of Front Runner Strategies. And I should say, we are getting now a lot of emails, a lot of questions, calls. I'm going to encourage all of our listeners, because we have now about 17 minutes left for this program. We're not going to be able to get to everyone. I'm going to do my best to get to you. But please continue the conversation on Facebook. I'm sure all of our guests would be willing to visit and answer questions there as well. I'm going to take an email question from a listener named Christina. And she says, I'm a mother of a transgender son. She says, transgender Hoosiers are people just like you and me. Currently, my transgender son has no legal recourse if he were to be terminated from a job or denied service just because he is trans. If you doubt this happens, please talk to any number of transgender people who have bravely come forward publicly to testify on this issue. They pose no credible threat to other citizens in restrooms or other public spaces. They are mocked, harassed, assaulted, and murdered at a much higher rate than non-trans Americans. They are a targeted minority. They deserve protection, not special rights. How much discrimination, how much bullying is okay? Leaving out public accommodation allows humiliation, anxiety, and discrimination to occur with the government's blessing. I find this unacceptable. Let's just fix this now. Add four words and a comma to the state's civil rights laws, period. Keep it simple. How realistic is that that will happen, Senator Holdman? And I also should ask, how much longer can you give us?
I can stay on until 2 o'clock.
Great. So we're here till the end. How realistic is that we could ever get to the four words and a comma?
Sure. Well, that seems like a simple thing to do, but it's not that simple. The bill that was four words and a comma was, I think, 17 pages long, that Senator Lannon introduced. And so it's not quite as simple as that. 40%, nearly 40% of Hoosiers live under an HRO, a human rights ordinance, within that's been crafted by their local government. So some of the things that this email author says, it may be that those are protected by a local ordinance that has been passed by City County Council, Indianapolis, or Fort Wayne City Council, South Bend, Columbus, Bloomington, the larger urban communities. Like I said, there's nearly 40% of Hoosiers live under an HRO that does provide protection. And when I had a meeting, an opportunity to meet with transgender folks, they talked about some of the pain that they go through, the way they're treated by others, and I cautioned them to say, some of the things you're telling me technically is not discrimination. It is a criminal act that people are victimizing you because of property damage, because of battery, assault. And my advice was, talk to the mayor, talk to the chief of police to say, we want you to understand the situation and life as we live it as a transgender person. And the abuse that we take to make sure the law enforcement is aware and up to speed with the type of issues that they deal with, because those folks deserve protection as well as anybody else in our society. And there is no excuse for folks to be battered or for their property to be damaged, for their cars to be damaged, or their homes to be damaged. There's no excuse for that whatsoever. But it is much more complex than just four words and a comma.
Peter.
I want to push back a little bit on the 40% number that Senator Holdman and Senator Long have continued to use throughout this debate. By our calculation, that number for cities and municipalities that have meaningful HROs or human rights ordinances that include both sexual orientation and gender identity and are enforceable is actually only at 24%. There are several cities, unfortunately too many in my opinion, that have HROs which do name sexual orientation and gender identity but lack any enforceability, meaning that for all of the other protected classes, race, age, disability, national origin, religion, the person who is committing the discriminatory act, you know, if a complaint is filed, there is an investigation. However, there are many cities in Indiana where, and this is only so for LGBT-related complaints, the person who is committing the discriminatory act has to agree to be a part of the investigation before the process can continue to move forward. That makes absolutely no sense in my mind. You know, I equate it to myself going and robbing a bank and, you know, in the court of law, someone coming back to me and saying, okay, well, here's the bank that you've robbed and here are, you know, you are Mr. Robber. Well, Mr. Robber, do you agree to participate into this investigation about the crime that you've committed? That makes absolutely no sense. And in the year 2016, the idea that LGBT Hoosiers have different rights in our state based on which zip code they live in or which zip code they're currently in is out of touch with reality. It's out of touch with what the majority of Hoosiers want. And, you know, certainly I think cobbling the votes together to, as the caller said, you know, get to a four words and a comma approach. I will agree with Senator Holdman. I do think that is probably very, very difficult. But in terms of the idea that there is a more simplistic solution that would actually guarantee broad-based civil rights and hopefully you know, get us to a point where we can end this discussion and move forward, I think she's spot on.
I'm going to head to a caller right now. Marion, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Thank you for discussing this. It's very disturbing that I just don't understand writing an anti-discrimination law and we discriminate against transgender. It's just almost ridiculous. Mm. But I am an ordained minister, and I also feel there are certain concessions that all of us have to live with in order to live in a democracy. I live a vegan lifestyle, a Gandhian lifestyle. My taxes go for war. My taxes go for the killing, subsidizing of factory farms that kill and abuse animals, and yet there's Christians violating my Christian beliefs, and you know we don't get that attention. So I hold the Christians responsible to open their hearts. I mean, this is unbelievable, the things they're doing in the name of God.
Thanks very much.
I just don't understand it.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call and the question, Marion. I appreciate it. Senator Holdman, that is an argument that that you do hear. Does this mean then that, you know, for example, Marion raises the point she doesn't believe in war. There are obviously religious faiths that have that are devout and conscientious objection. Does that mean then that they would be able to withhold taxes that go toward military spending or things like that? I mean, is there this sense that by carving out these broad areas of conscience, as it were, that we could be opening a Pandora's box?
Well, as Megan said, we already do. Mm-hmm. And it was pointed out to us by some of the legal and constitutional experts that in most cases where there has been an exemption for religious belief carved out of any civil rights law, that the religious exemption has stood the court test, and we do that with on the federal level with conscientious objectors. There is a provision made in many cases for folks because of their religious belief. My district has about 10,000 Amish people that live in my district, and we make concessions all the time at the state level for folks' religious faith because of things they can and can't do. You know, we don't require require them to license buggies that travel on our roads, is just an example. So there are carve-outs that are allowed for in our code in the state of Indiana, and so it's not peculiar from that standpoint.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Dick who says, every law defines things that must be done or things that cannot be done. The law also spells out penalties for violating the law. Also, respect cannot be legislated and must be earned. This is one. What issues, requirements, or violations would an LGBT law define? What privileges or protections would the LGBT community gain that they don't have today as ordinary citizens? Should a Christian or Muslim baker or florist be driven out of business because they don't want to cater a wedding with two grooms? What public restroom requirement would be required? And there would be a small group of LGBT members that would push the law to the limits just to make an extreme point. I think, obviously, that comes from the other side of the debate. I'm going to let Peter, Megan, or Chris, either any one of you, choose which one of you wants to take it real quickly. Megan.
Sounds like I was nominated for this one. Everybody pointed at me. So
there's a problem with sitting in the middle, clearly.
I mean, I think that to act like this debate is about, you know, wedding cakes and weddings with two grooms or two brides is really, it's a mischaracterization of the debate. Part of why I'm here today is because I'm with a group called Tech for Equality, represent, you know, 50 businesses with over 5,000 employees, and they're trying to bring people to our state, right? But right now in Indiana, if you are LGBT, part of the LGBT community, you are not protected from being fired from your job because you're part of that community, not because you're a bad worker or anything else. Indiana's a at-will state. You can get fired for all of those things, but you can get fired simply for being who you are. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. You can be, if you know, right now I rent. I live with my fiance. If my landlord had a problem with that, they could kick me out of my housing. That's what this debate's about, not about wedding cakes and cookies or whatever kind of thing that people want to throw in there.
Chris, do you want to weigh in too? You were leaning in, so.
Yeah, there's already exemptions for small businesses. So people talk about the small baker, small florist. There's already exemptions in the existing law, and we were not looking to remove those exemptions at all.
Gotten an email from a listener named Rich. If you want to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. He says, first, he wants to let Senator Holdman know that he appreciates your attempts at a compromise. That seems to be all but a lost art in modern politics. Then he says his question is, does the religious liberties side understand that their rather hardline interpretation of the Bible is but one of many? I know some very devout Christians who have no problem at all with the LGBT folks, for example. How can the state hope to provide protections for every different interpretation of multiple faiths? Senator Holdman, I'll let you take a shot at that one first.
Well, I think that's the issue of the day. How do we reach a compromise with a degree of civility that lets us have this, what I call just an adult conversation on this issue, to find out what pieces of our culture and our society and the law do we cherish to the fact that we allow for exemptions or we allow for special protections? And I guess before somebody jumps on that, not special protection, but equal protection, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just, that's the question of the day, John. How do we do that?
Let me ask this question, because it seems to me we are operating in a different kind of political environment these days, and I think Rich's question, email, got to that when he said compromise now seems to be a lost art. That is a spirit to which both Senator Holdman and Senator Long made reference in their remarks about this, you know, when the bill did not come forward. A lot veteran lobbyists says that really what goes on now in crafting legislation is that everybody understands that compromise and refining ideas really doesn't exist anymore. It is win or be killed. That simple. Is that the stage that we are at with this debate or this discussion that there has to be a winner and there has to be a loser. I see Megan shaking her head. See, facial gestures are dangerous too, Megan.
I have too many opinions. I don't think that we are necessarily at that point. I mean, first off, again, we have people like Senator Holdman and Senator Long who are open to having these discussions. While I am unhappy that things didn't move forward, I think we do have some people in the legislature who are willing to do that. And we have some people in political campaigns as well. I mean, I'm sitting here as a Republican with some friends of mine who, you know, we don't agree on partisan issues necessarily, but we agree on this issue. And I think trying to find common ground is possible.
I'm going to give everybody a crack at that question. I should say that we've got a little bit less than 2 minutes left. Peter.
Yeah, sure. And especially in terms, I want to go back to the faith point, right, for where members of the faith community line down on this issue. You know, as a leader of an organization that represents over 450 businesses, many of those business owners are also deeply rooted in the faith community. And we had many of them who were small business owners themselves come to us and say, you know, I really want to join your coalition because I believe in the equal treatment of all people. But I just want to let you know, I'm not, you know, my faith, I'm not really there on the whole same-sex marriage thing yet. You know, in my church, that's not something that we do. But is it okay if I can still be a part of this, right? I don't think anyone should be discriminated against. And, you know, certainly, right? I mean, I think it's important to start separating out some of these issues and doing some of that issue education to make folks realize what exactly it is that we're talking about.
Chris, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds. I want to give Senator Holdman the last word.
Okay. So. Well, first, I do want to thank Senator Holdman and Senator Long. They held a discussion that was civil, and they were willing to compromise. And I think that is something that we should point out, that it was a nice civil discussion. I think that, you know, this is something we can work on and we can come to a good conclusion.
Senator Holdman, you've got about 30 seconds as well.
I would just say I'm terribly sorry to the folks who wanted something done that I couldn't get it done for you. And I'm terribly sorry that it turned out the way it did. And I just hope folks that are on the other side of this argument that claim to have somewhat of a monopoly on the religious viewpoint will understand that they may not necessarily be correct on this issue, and we just pray for understanding and wisdom that we do the right thing, and that Indiana is a welcoming state, and we've been damaged in the past, and we hope that this, as we continue this discussion.
Senator, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off.
It's quite all right.
I'm going to have to thank all of you and thank our listeners. I'm John Kroll. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.